Second and 10 Bills from their 25. Peterman takes the snap. He's looking left. He throws that way. It's picked off by Jonathan Joseph across the 15, 10, 5. Rock and roll. The Texans go in front on the pick six. Third down at 6. Bills from their 30. Peterman in the gut. Here's the snap. Four-man rush. Peterman flushed out to the right side. Trying to throw it back to the left. And this is picked off. Taken across the 30 right side. 25 and out of bounds at the 20-yard line. Kareem Jackson with the icing on the cake.
In the air, left field. That is slicing. Down in the corner. And it is off the wall. Two runs are in. And Devers is going to score. It's a three-run double. Jackie Bradley Jr.
We got a lot to get to this morning on a busy baseball and football Monday on Sports Radio 610. A loss in game two of the ALCS last night, but the Astros did get the split in Fenway Park this weekend. Mike, Seth, and Paul. Let's start with the football game. The Texans won kind of a wacky football game where they're thankful again that they have another incompetent performance on the other side with Nathan Peterman. What were your guys' main takeaways from the game?
All I could keep thinking about was when we had Michael Lombardi on Thursday, and he said very emphatically, the Bills can't win. The Bills can't win a football game. The only thing they can do is capitalize on their opponent's mistakes. So that it became very clear early on that, okay, as long as the Texans keep capitalizing on the Bills' mistakes, like in the special teams, they can win this game. And then you remember, like, oh yeah, the offensive line can't block, and Deshaun Watson's injured, and all that. So as one of our callers yesterday on the post-game show said, my heart is full with that win, but my brain is pissed off. They're 3-3, and they haven't played a good game yet, as Chris Wessling from NFL.com said, and that's where they are. They're a perfect Bill O'Brien football team right now. 500, not that impressive.
Except for the league, Seth.
And the defense. The defense is impressive, though. That's where they're really coming into form.
I think you hit a reset button with the season, and I'm not happy that we're hitting the reset button the way that we are here, but Jacksonville, Miami, and Denver are up next. There's a chance for more wins.
Jacksonville looks like crap, too.
Right. And on top of that, I mean, you got a great performance, at least compared to what we've seen in recent history, out of your special teams. It was helped by the Bills a little bit. And the defense, which is also helped by the Bills a little bit. Thank you, Nathan Peterman, for existing. On the other end, as you said, they are such a tough watch. And, I mean, either they are a real talented underachiever, which I think is a stretch, or they're actually bad, and their offense is limited by a banged-up Watson, which Bill O'Brien denied after the game, or it is getting worse. It is not improving, yeah. And that is concerning.
Three people, Frank Reich, Jason Garrett, Nathan Peterman. If not for those three people, this team might be 0-6. And usually I'm the kind of person who is pretty optimistic when you win, if you win ugly, because I just feel like, hey, you got the wins, and eventually you'll play better. But as you mentioned, Seth, they have not played well all year long, and I'm just deeply unsatisfied. Right. I said in the pregame show that if you could pick an opponent to try to get a win against at home, it would be either the Bills or the Arizona Cardinals. And Deshaun is throwing picks, and he's fumbling the football. And I thought the offensive line, which got better for 2 weeks, all of a sudden regressed into horribleness yet again.
They also, I mean, they were playing against a good defense. The Bills are a good defense. They've got studs up front that can physically wallop people, and that's what happens. And I think the offensive line has played better in pass protection in some respects, but your standards have changed so much. And even when I'm criticizing Deshaun Watson for fleeing the pocket too early at times, I go and I watch other teams, and I'm like, oh yeah, that's a pocket. Like, that's what it's like. Because sometimes it doesn't look like there's pressure, but the inside three offensive linemen have gotten driven back 4 yards. So there's a pocket, but it's right in Deshaun Watson's lap.
The pocket is really Jon Snow trying to gasp for breath in the midst of the Battle of the Bastards, or, say, any concert. It's like a mosh pit. Mm. Hey, he might have a lane that he can see people through, but is he actually going to be able to deliver it through there? And I feel like these situations, as they keep happening over and over, and over again. I feel like Watson is regressing throughout it all.
Yeah.
Because he can't get out and he can't really get better at making progressions, because we're at a point now where what plays can he make downfield if he's looking to make plays downfield? I'm to the point now where I just want him to check down. And that actually works all right with Alfred Blue. I'd like to see them involve the tight ends a little bit more. Yeah. I guess they did involve the tight ends a lot, because Ryan Griffin got 5 targets and 0 catches over the course of the game. Classic. That's what we like to expect out of Ryan Griffin in this Texans offense.
Well, and that's where I think people need to understand. It's genuinely not the play calling that's the problem. It's Bill O'Brien's coaching of the offense to begin with. Like, anything he calls at various points is doomed, including where I know he went to great lengths yesterday to inform the media that it's hard to score in the red zone and you have to work really, really hard. You know where it's really not hard to score? When it's first and goal on the one. Offenses score 85% of the time. I don't need to hear about how hard it is to score. Like, when you're on defense and you stuff a team, when they get it first and goal at the one, it's like sex, but better. Because sex, you're going to have multiple opportunities for the rest of your life. Goal line stands on the 1 yard line. I can't count in my head how many. I played on some awesome defenses. I don't know how many of those I had in my life in like 20 years of playing organized football. Maybe 4? Maybe? Like, that's an awesome thing to do. But the Texans are giving defensive players those memories that last a lifetime. There are so many. Like, think about some of these defensive players that even in a loss, we're like, boy, I'll tell you what. One of the gutsiest performances I was ever involved in was when we stopped the Texans down at first and goal in their own place on the one. And somebody will say, like, well, you know, they had like 4 of those that season. Yeah, but still.
And after that Will Fuller pass interference that set the Texans up at the 1 yard line, they did everything. It wasn't just out of the shotgun like it was last week. They went under center. They ran the ball up the middle. Then they did the speed sweep to Kiki QT, which lost yardage.
Which, by the way, okay, now a tendency. You want tendencies. Okay, quarterback sweep works on the goal line 3 weeks ago, so what do? They run it last week. Jet sweep worked last week, so what do? Down on the goal line. Run it again this week. Like, hey, Bill, everybody watches film. You realize you're not the only person that watches film. Like, you think, like, we're up there watching film till 2 a.m. Maybe you guys don't realize that. Well, I know the Bills are. I know that those guys knew exactly what was coming there and were ready for it. Like, what the hell?
I was sitting next to Mike and I sarcastically predicted the speed sweep.
Yeah.
I have a counterpoint though on that play. Now,
point me to the counter.
The counterpoint is, now, it barely worked last week. It's not like Kiki would just walk into the end zone with nobody around him. I guess the counterpoint would be, if the plays work, do you just get away from them entirely, or do you try them again and make sure the other team stops it?
It has to be well executed. And that's where I'll go back to again. I honestly don't get as upset about the play calling. It's that I would accept that, hey, it's Rick Smith's fault with the offensive line if it weren't Bill O'Brien's 5th year here. And
oh yeah,
you know, and if also this, you have inadequate athletes on the offensive line, but I will never under any circumstances accept the number of times that I see offensive linemen standing around after a failed run play where they haven't blocked, they haven't touched a human being. Mike, they have offensive linemen who will go an entire run play without touching a person. I'm not even talking about missing a block. They don't touch anybody. They're wandering around like blind people in the forest. It's weird. It's like they're all coked out.
That's
like
on Devlin, then.
They've been doing acid for 3 days.
And that's on Devlin. If that's the kind of stuff that's going and happening and continuing and is not actually remedying itself.
Oh, it's a horribly, like, they're bad athletes, but it's not a well-coached offensive line. Like, they just aren't. They flat out do so many stupid things that unless they are genuine dullards, like, we should get the Wonderlic score. I will take some blame off the coaching staff for how stupid that offensive line is if all those guys have sub-20 Wonderlics. Other than that, there's no excuse for them playing as dumb as they play. It's pathetic. It's really, really sick.
Doesn't matter, Seth. It's a 3-3 and 10 lead.
I don't know if you guys understand how hard it is to get guys to know who they're supposed to block. It's difficult. You know, sometimes they've got their smartphones they got to look at. They've got social media they're distracted by. Hard to get these guys to buckle down and be like, oh, all right, I guess I'll take the linebacker on this play. What? I used to at least, you know what? And then some people will say that they shouldn't have gotten rid of the fullback. They kept Jay Prosh around like he was Mike Damn Allstott or something. Allstott's not a good example. He wasn't really a good blocker.
That's not their issue.
No. They part of the issue again. All right, you can blame Rick Smith all you want about the offensive line. Kendall Lamb is still on this team. Somebody was telling Rick Smith that Kendall Lamb had potential for the last 4 years. Jay Prosh stuck around for 3 years despite his inability to actually block people. And these are the standards. Like, I would watch Jay Prosh just run around and block nobody. He was a fullback who would touch nobody. And that's the way these guys have been coached for 5 years. Like, is this going to change? Is this somehow having some first-round picks that you can squander those? Anyway, I'm too angry after a win. But I'm upset about the Astros' loss as well.
I actually feel way better about the Astros' loss, to be honest with you. Now, it was a missed opportunity last night. They fell 7-5. But the Red Sox, maybe this is too cliche, but the Red Sox are a very good baseball team. They won 108 games, and their offense finally came to life. My frustration with the Astros' loss is they were up 4-2 with their second-best pitcher on the mound, and they blew that opportunity. Overall, though, going 1-1 in Boston, I think, is a pretty fair result. And the game on Saturday was a pretty close game throughout until they broke it open in the top of the ninth inning.
Saturday was reflective of what I thought this series would be. It would be close for a while. The Astros would chase the Red Sox starting pitcher out eventually just by driving his pitch count up, being patient at the plate. They did that in that game, and then they had the offensive explosion at the very end. And I was hoping that that would happen in last night's game as well. I think it's a major failure on their end that after chasing David Price from the game and his loser ass, that guy makes $30 million a year and is an ace. And
they're standing
giving
ovation.
A standing yeah, ovation go, for giving up
some.
Four runs.
Go get
what
some,
a,
David
what
Price.
A loser.
You know what? David
he is
Price,
a loser.
David Price was getting a standing ovation for happening to pitch on the same night that Gerrit Cole had his worst night of the year. And that's where I'm with you, Mike. I'm not all that worked up or upset about the Astros because you know what? They produced offensively. They were let down by, like, and there's not one little ounce of anger in my soul for Gerrit Cole. He's been nails throughout the season and through the playoffs so far. He had a really bad night. He didn't have command. He just flat out didn't have it.
Yes.
And he got into a pickle really early on and had to kind of just try to hover around until the troops could come.
You got to the Sox bullpen, though, and all of a sudden something happened to the bats. That's my issue, is that they did not look like themselves. They were not as patient at the plate until the very end of the game. In the ninth inning, when Kimbrel comes on the mound, you feel great when Kimbrel's out there. That's at least the one great thing you could take out of this. The Red Sox can't use their closer anymore. And the other good thing, I guess, going forward is Boston decided, instead of using Game 3 starter Rick Porcello to start Game 3, that they would put him in the eighth inning. And he looked really good, but they only used him for one inning. I don't know what that does for him potentially starting Game 3 or to
he's
be
gonna
get to Game 4 or
I
whatever.
I think he's going to start Game 4.
Okay. Whatever the case there, okay, it's a little bit alarming that he was pitching as well as he did, but at the same time, okay, now you're pushing him back another game. I don't really want to go up against Rick Porcello after I saw him in that one inning of work.
He looked
awesome.
Yeah, he was Boston's best pitcher last night, without question. He was throwing high fastballs by Marwin, by Reddick. He was tremendous in the eighth inning last night. I just look at it as a missed opportunity. It was also annoying that, yes, Jackie Bradley Jr. is not the...
He's
not,
terrible!
Yeah, you don't want to get beat by him. Now, I think he's sometimes better than his stats indicate.
No, he's
my
a horrible
eye test.
Hitter. He's a great fielder. He's the Red
fielder.
Sox Jake Marisnick.
But he got that extra bounce on that double along the wall. And if he had not had that little extra bounce at the top of the wall there in left field, then they would have only scored two runs, and it would have been tied as opposed to being down 5-4. And it was one of those weird moments where, like, I think a lot of people watching were like, all right, there are runs being scored all over the place. He hits that double, they score three. All right, 5-4, game on. But the problem is sometimes you assume you're going to score more runs, and then it takes a lot longer on the road to actually score more runs than you're thinking at that exact moment. That was my takeaway in that little situation.
I don't like, I had forgotten about this, the lesson I learned last year, which is that Mookie Betts annoys me because I find him likable. I don't like, I feel like the Astros should have the monopoly on the most likable players, but I can't help but like that guy.
So. Yeah.
One last thing. What the hell, Maldonado? Catch the ball.
Yeah, catch the ball.
How did you leave feeling like, because we're all biased because we know and love Lance McCullers. And
this is my first, like, damn it. This,
yeah.
Damn it.
But he was off, but it was made worse by Maldonado.
Yeah.
Just flat out being, did he actually successfully catch fewer than 50% of the pitches in that Lance McCullers outing?
It I think felt
he
like
did.
It.
And Betts just worked his way around the diamond.
I think it's a simple take. Lance can't walk the first batter. He knows that way. Like, you can't walk guys as a reliever, but Maldonado can't have two passed balls, especially the last one.
Right. You can't have him advance on all passed balls and the wild pitch as well. Also, don't pitch Hector Rendon again. Nope. Can't happen.
Unless they're
in
a situation.
Hector Rendon against Mookie Betts. What are you thinking?
I felt suddenly naked all of a sudden when I realized, oh, yeah, how little experience Josh James had.
Yeah.
When he's out there.
You're in the crucible all of a sudden.
Game two of the ALCS. And like, he's only appeared in 3 minutes of action.